That. All right, good morning. I will call to order the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 18, 2016. Only 21 days till Election Day, but who's counting? I would ask everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First item on our agenda today is public comment number one, as always, and this is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics that are on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so can come up. Seeing no one move to the microphone, we'll move on. We need a motion to recess in our capacity as Board of Supervisors, and then we will come back in our capacity as Grand District Trustees.
I would make a motion to recess as the Board of Supervisors to reconvene as the Board of Trustees for our drainage districts.
Second motion.
Motion to second. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We are now in recess. I now call us to order in our capacity as drainage district trustees, and we have bid letting and opening for improvement of drainage district Richland 20. Scott, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, we received bids. Howard Conley is representing the ISG today. He's got the bid in rules and really meet them and meet my phone office. This is for a project that will be, the bid will be awarded next week, Wednesday at 6:30 p.m.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Again, if anyone missed or is needing one of these sheets, I have extras. If not, I'll get right to it. The first one here is from Synergy Contracting. It's Security. Where are they at?
Where are they
located?
Just looking for an address.
It is 20. Let's see here.
We'll open it up, see if we can find it.
All right. Aaron, do you want to come and help us begin through the process?
Yeah.
What is that for? Moving around?
I've never heard of that. So.
I got that right. It came up with Bond Grant.
Bond Grant.
Bond Grant? Okay.
I think that's right, yeah.
All right. All right. Bid security in the form of a bid bond appears to be in order. Recognize addendum 1 and addendum 2. All right, so total for divisions 1, 2, and 3, $332,157.00. That's 332,157 and no cents. Total division 4, $384,665.00. 3846650 for a total bid of $716,822 and no cents. 716-822-00. All right. Next is from Gerke Incorporated out of Eldora, Iowa. Bid security in the form of a bid bond appears to be in order. recognize Addendum 1 and Addendum 2. All right, the total for Divisions 1, 2, and 3, $280,926.69. 280,926.69. Total for Division 4, $418,548.50. 418,548.50 for a total bid of $699,475.19. 699,475.19. Next, we have this graph excavating.
Graff
out of Toledo, Iowa. Bid bond, or bid security in the form of bid bond, appears to be in order. Recognize Addendum 1 and Addendum 2. Total, Divisions 1, 2, and 3, $259,590.00. That's 259,590.00. Total, Division 4, $446,000. That's 446,000.00. For a total bid of $705,590.00. 705,590.00. Next up is Minger Construction out of Jordan, Minnesota. Bid security in the form of a bid bond. Appears to be in order. Recognize Addendum 1 and Addendum 2. Total for Divisions 1, 2, and 3, $233,248.50. 233,248.50. Total Division 4, $381,247.50. 381,247.50 for a total bid of $614,496.00. 614,496.00. And last, we have Lodge Construction out of Clarksville, Iowa.
Where's Clarksville? Anybody know?
Southeast. South.
Clarksville.
South. Well, that's
south. The east side.
Just wondering. Yeah. I think I went through it once in my...
You probably know a lot of places.
Have a bid security in the form of a bid bond. Appears to be in order. Recognize addendum 1 and addendum 2. Total divisions 1, 2, and 3. $224,185.00. 224,185.00. Total division 4. $330,700.00. 330,700.00 for a total bid of $554,885.00. 554,885.00.
All right, thank you guys. We will talk more about this at our meeting next. It's next Wednesday, right? So I take a motion to adjourn in our capacity as drainage district trustees.
So move.
Motion and a second.
Clinton.
Aye.
G.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We are adjourned as drainage district trustees, and I call us back to order in our capacity as supervisors. Next item on our agenda is consideration of minutes from the 10-4. And 10-11, we're going to do appointment minutes next week. So this is just 10-4 and 10-11, regular meeting.
Moved.
Second.
Any additions, corrections, notations?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed for it.
Forward.
Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel action passed. Consideration of claims for 10-2016.
I move approval. I like that number.
Second. Motion and second. Clinton.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Claims passed. Consent agenda, please add utility permits 17-031 through 17-035.
Approve the consent agenda with the aforementioned utility permits.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of revised drug-free workplace drug and alcohol testing policy after the seven-day review. Alyssa, we know.
Good morning, Leanne.
Excuse me.
Leanne.
What seven-day review?
It's going to go back out.
All right, so on here, we did take comments. I sent an email out to all the department heads and elected officials. I received a few comments back. There weren't any substantial changes to the policy that you see on the agenda today. I would like to note there was a question about, and under prohibitions on the second page, it states that if an employee becomes aware that another employee is selling, purchasing, transferring, or using illegal substances while on the job, he is expected to take prompt action. The question was, well, what's the prompt action? And that would be notifying your supervisor or HR that they're aware that another employee is doing those actions. I didn't change the language in there. I feel like it's clear enough as stated in the policy. There was one other item under... one of the testing that stated that if someone that was inconsistent with something later on in the policy, we did state that if somebody tests positive, that they go on unpaid leave at that point. Our old policy said that they were able to take vacation That was still in the language in one of the things, so I did change that to go on unpaid leave throughout the policy.
And is there a timetable to that, when the unpaid leave?
Well, it stays in here. It really depends on the test results. They either have to have a follow-up test and be negative, or it depends on, if it's an alcohol test, it depends on the level. The results. So and that's all clear. That's all spelled out in the policy. Yeah. No, it doesn't say it'll be on unpaid forever. It's just until if a situation arises that they have to have further evaluation, then we take care of that at that point. I did have one comment from an employee about the. I know this policy drafted here does not have pre-employment testing for all employees. That is something that we wanted to discuss at this meeting. I did have one comment that they thought that it wasn't a necessary cost, and that it was invasive to the applicant. So I just wanted to let you know that I did have one comment about that. Otherwise, I didn't, have any other feedback. I did have a conversation with the sheriff to make sure his internal policies are consistent with what needs to.
Now, we already know, though, that there are certain departments that are required for that. And so it's based on the type of jobs they're doing and so forth.
The pre-employment testing. Currently, it's only for we only do pre-employment drug and alcohol testing for positions that require a CDL.
Right.
The drug testing is a requirement. We do the alcohol testing in addition to that for those positions. I would recommend that if we change the policy to do pre-employment testing for all that is just drug, and that the alcohol would only be applicable to those that require a CDL, since that is part of the random testing that they utilize. That's how I would like to see the policy written.
Can you speak to the reasonable suspicion testing?
Sure. You'll notice through this policy there are places in here that only apply to certain the individuals that require that CDL. The reasonable suspicion portion would apply to all employees. As a public employer, we do have the right to test our employees if we have reasonable suspicion. Now, in that section of the policy, there are pretty specific documentation. Our supervisors had to be trained in order to recognize the signs and symptoms of alcohol or drug use.
Are they?
They had a training within the last year, and we would make sure.
Okay, so we are there.
Correct.
You're not suggesting expanded random testing to all employees?
We can only do that for CDL required positions for public sector.
Mm-hmm. So our options are, so we've already passed this on 7-day review.
Yep.
We passed the draft on 7-day review, received the comments. I know I am a proponent of pre-employment testing for everybody, but that's not in here as we sit here today. And so the question for this board, as I see it, and Melissa, help me if I'm missing this, this board can go ahead and pass this policy after 7-day review, which just applies to those that need a CDL.
For the pre-employment, correct.
We can add language that would make it applicable to all pre-employment hires and send it back for an additional 7-day review, or we can decline to adopt the policy. I mean, that's the three options that I see that we have.
So individual testing itself costs, give me a ballpark figure. Looking at the total number of employees that might be hired in a given year, we set our budget, we're going to put aside, assuming we would put aside the dollars we save, all new employees will go through this. What are we talking about?
It's between $60 and $70 for a pre-employment test, between the cost that McFarland charges to actually administer the drug test, and then St. Louis or Unity Point charges to review that. There are drug consortium authority that handles all that. So, when I look at, we don't have a lot of turnover here at the county. Seasonal would be the most. I think between 3,000 and 5,000 would be for the pre-employment. A portion of the test, we hire, I would say probably, I don't have the exact numbers, but 20 to 30 non-seasonal staff a year. Mm-hmm. It really depends on how many retirements that we have.
You're talking about less than $5,000.
Yeah.
I guess it's not a concern, but it's a thought process in terms of if we try to do this for all employees, is that based on at the time that they apply before they accept the job, there's a window of opportunity that test, I mean, how far does the test go back to determine usage?
How far would that test?
How do we say an individual comes in and applies for a job and we say, okay, you have to go through a drug and alcohol test, or if it's going to be drug only test, they submit that. I would assume that test is going to be detectable within a certain window, maybe 3 to 4 days or whatever.
So we did check with McFarland Clinic. I would like, after an offer is made, I'd like their drug test to be done within 24 to 48 hours of the offer. And we'll do our best to get them worked in to do that, and we can kind of coordinate the offer with that. We make the appointment for the pre-employment drug screening.
Okay, so then the other question is, historically, looking at our employees and so forth that we've had beside those with the CDL, I know that normally we would like to think that all employees, we want to treat all employees the same. However, I don't see the job requirement basically being the same. And I wonder if we're just adding another little layer out there that may or may not necessarily have anything to do with the employee's ability to perform the job.
I take a pre-employment drug screening as part of your pre-employment background check. We do a pre-employment background check for all employees. This is kind of tied in. We do not do a physical for all positions.
Right.
We are one of the few public sector employers that I found that does not do pre-employment drug screening. We did have a bunch of emails going around between cities and counties, and most of them do pre-employment for all positions, not just those that require CDL.
You reached out to
them. Absolutely. Yes.
And you found?
Most of them do pre-employment drug screening for all positions. They don't just say it's only CDL required.
This has been discussed at IMWCA in the past, and I think it's a preferred practice.
Correct.
And I do know a lot of the counties and mostly the cities probably have it more than what the counties do. I think it's been a little lax in some of those areas. I'm not basically being opposed to it. I guess my question basically is looking at prior history, is this the right way for us to go at this point in time? Looking at the potential of the individuals that are going to be working for Story County and none operating machinery type equipment where this could be somewhat impaired their ability to do the job. That's my biggest concern. And my other concern has a lot more to do with the fact that as an African American, and I've looked at how this has been used to make it difficult for people of color, oftentimes because of a predetermined drug or alcohol use, if this distracts or discourages individuals from applying to positions, the fact that they feel like that they've got to go through that and not fully understanding the time sequence that what we're talking about. Because I could see someone that maybe taking a drug or something that could have been 2 or 3 weeks ago, a month or so ago, still feeling like that might show up in some way that could disqualify them for a job. And I'm not sure I want to go down that path.
Are you talking any drugs, or are you talking the...
No, I guess
the five that we spelled out. That's what we test for in the
policy.
If they're on a prescription drug,
right.
Obviously,
that's
no problem. It would be the illegal.
Yeah, these are five very specific illegal substances. Yeah. We're not talking about testing for alcohol, is what I heard
Absolutely.
You say. The other thing that I want to point out to you guys is, as we continue to move toward the board's stated goal of self-insuring our health insurance, this does have a bottom line impact.
Yes.
The other thing I'll say is, and maybe this is a little hard-hearted of it, we owe our employees a lot. We don't owe the people before they become our employees anything. We have a right to know. In fact, more than a right. We have a responsibility to the people of Story County to ensure who we're hiring is up to doing the job and is not going to put an undue burden on the system for something that we could have tested for. For me, I think we're already doing the testing. We just happen to be doing it for a small segment of our employees. Why wouldn't we expand that to anybody we want to hire? We're talking about five very specific illegal drugs. It does have a very direct impact, or potentially a very direct impact on our bottom line and what health insurance costs are going to be, not to mention productivity issues. I think it's the right thing to do. I think if you have a policy, Wayne, I'm really sensitive to your concern. I think it's a fair concern to have. I just think we can get around that because, frankly, I don't care who you are if you're using these illegal drugs leading up to getting employed by Story County. You're probably not somebody we want here.
Right. I'm in agreement on that point, Michael. And I guess I'll have to admit, I did not go down and look at the five that we were talking about in general. But I just know that the concept in itself tends to discourage potential employees. And that's where I'm going more than anything else.
No, I completely understand that. We would, as part of the application process, they do sign on the application that they would be subject to a background check and other pre-employment testing as applicable. We could change the language on our application to say you will be subject to a pre-employment drug screen, so that is very clear. When they apply for the job, that they understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I also look at it as a way, you know, the pre-employment testing, whether it's physical testing or physical drug screen, background check, I view it as that's part of what the employer does, because we could have some liability if we hire an individual with a criminal background or a substance abuse issue. You know, we could have some liability that could occur after we hire them. And so we're doing our due diligence as far as checking everything we possibly can prior to bringing an individual on board here.
So the other question, going back to Supervisor Sanders' comment, in discussion with our insurance carriers, has there been an indication that this would be a positive thing for us in terms of possibly premium costs in the long term?
I haven't checked with the liability insurance and the work comp. There isn't a, as far as I know, there's no reduction in our insurance costs. They do recommend it. They recommend physicals, too, for all physicians, but you have to weigh the cost benefit of that also. I would not imagine there's any liability. We can sure check with our insurance carriers.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, Wayne, I'm not talking about the premiums. I'm talking about the actual cost of administering the insurance and the number of claims that you're going to get, because there is a correlation between some of these things and additional claims.
Okay, now I'm going to put you on the spot. I heard where he's coming from as HR and dealing with it. The people that are hired and come through our office or going through the various pre-employment matrix, whatever we have in place. What's your feeling on this?
I think it's important to. I wouldn't have brought it to the board as a consideration if I didn't feel that it was important for us to put a procedure into test employees. I think what you can do prior to getting them on board, the background check, the pre-employment testing, drug, physical, anything like that is extremely important, especially in this day and age.
And underscore pre-employment. We're not talking about random drug testing of existing employees.
No, that's not allowed.
Yeah. Party, anything?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I, until very recently, came out of the private sector. And as an airline employee, I'm subject to background checks that nobody in this county is subject to. And I think as you find yourself in 2016, this is the world we are. And the fact that the county's not here, I think this is a very low bar for me, in my mind, to step over so that the county just finds itself in the place where it probably should be. And I have support for it. I'm mindful of the concerns, too, because I have seen people that have told me personally that because of their private lives that they were probably not likely to enter particular, industries and workforces because they made a decision. And I don't want to exclude us from having the best talent that we can get, but I don't think It is an unreasonable expectation of somebody in Story County to expect, as they interface with any county employee, that the county employee be in a state where they are not impaired. And to me, that is where this whole argument turns. And I think that if we can do something that allows our new employees, as we bring them in, as we refresh through the retirement process and the people move to other careers and choices, then I think this is something that I'd like to see in place.
All right, so board, three options. One, we take no action, not do anything with the policy, and stick with what we've got currently, which is not sufficient. Two, we can adopt the policy after a seven-day review as it's written. Three, we can add the new provision that this will apply to all rehires and send it back out for seven-day review. Those are your three choices, unless I'm missing something.
Just make sure if it applies to all, it's pre-employment.
What's your pleasure?
I would choose option three, that I would move to adopt that choice that we've put this as a county policy for our pre-employment screening of new applicants.
I will second it for discussion.
Okay. We're two discussions, so have at it.
Yeah, okay. Again, I'm 100% with where we are in this day and time. I think both of you have made some very compelling arguments for this. I still have a lot of reservations about the system that is in place and the potential for individuals who may have had some history in this particular area that are feeling like that they may not be able to get past their history, not necessarily, you know, the time that they come in and apply, because when you do background checks take you for a period of time in history. And sometimes, you know, depending upon how you look at that information, whether or not they're going to be, say, yes, this may have happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever, I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with us going beyond where we are currently right now, but I could accept it if that's the wish of the board.
Well, I think you make a great point.
I would not object to it. I would just say that I'm not 100% sure that I'm comfortable with this right now. And the reason that I want to say this, and I didn't do it, is my wife works with, as you know, as the president of the local NAACP chapter, and she's dealing with this with clients and individuals who are seeking employment all the time, and there are many issues that come up. This may not even be an issue for us, but I just want to be absolutely certain that we're not putting an added burden on people, but I agree with the rationale that both Supervisor Sanders said and what you said in terms of what are the kind of individuals we want to have employed here in Story County. I'm with you 100% in that.
Well, I would then amend my motion of option three to put it or move it to a seven-day discussion. Would you be comfortable in seconding that?
Yes, I would.
Well, this is going for 7 day review.
Going for 7 day either way.
I do want to make one clarification, Wayne. When we do the pre-employment drug screen, we don't look into the history of the individual.
Don't.
Had an issue? No. It is just that at that moment in time, they are subject to a drug test, and they either pass it or they don't.
Yeah, we're not worried about the past.
Now, there is something in here that the DOT does require, the CDL. We do have to send, within the last 2 years, we have to send a letter out to prior employers of that individual, but that's not for regular staff. That's only for CDL. So we're not looking into their 5 or 10 year history, whether they've had an issue. It is a snapshot in time. They go in for their drug screen. They pass it or they don't pass it.
Thank
you. Yeah. Anything else?
I'm good.
Okay. So we got a motion and a second. What we have a motion and a second on is taking the existing language, adding it as applicable to all pre-hires, and sending it back out to 7 day review. Everybody clear? That was your motion.
Yep. That was my motion.
All right. Everybody clear? Yep.
I've stated my concern, and I would be in support of the motion.
Yep. Chitty?
Aye.
Quinn?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes, goes back out for 7 day review. Thanks, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alyssa, for your research and checking this for us.
Next item is discussion consideration of strategic plan for Story County, Iowa, or the updates of that strategic plan. Leanne Harder. Is the interstate pretend closed?
Yeah, it is closed right now.
Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning. What is before the board this morning is a discussion and consideration of the annual update for changes as needed to the strategic plan for Story County, Iowa. After I put this presentation together, I did come in here and I tried a new layout, and I looked at the screen and realized the font is way too small. It's a different presentation template I used, so I apologize for that, but I'll try to reiterate what's on the screen. It's mostly to guide me to this discussion. As set forth in the strategic plan, there are five guiding objectives. And then through those guiding objectives, it's prioritized into six topic areas. Employee compensation, benefits, parks and trails, community resiliency, water quality, infrastructure, and public safety. So this existing strategic plan was approved by the board last August, amended in December of 2015, which I'll get to later in the presentation. So what I'm going to do is go through those six topic areas and highlight the comments I received from staff to the review, this annual review, and then note any potential changes or modifications. So the employee compensation and benefits, and if we've completed a step, if you look at the strategic plan, I just wrote completed, or if it's underway, note as such. I really want to just focus on those areas where there's potential modification. And the first section, employee compensation and benefits, step two, in discussions with Alyssa, would potentially require modification, beginning with changing the dates from 2015 to 2016 for beginning, and then a year later for the end. And then amending the language, so recognize long-serving employees through increased vacation accruals for employees with 20 years or more service, non-bargaining, and employee recognition. So some wordsmithing to get to the intent of the language. Do you want me to stop after each one or go through all six priority areas? I can do it, whatever the pleasure of the board.
I would say if there's questions,
if there are questions.
How many employees do we have that are 20 or plus? Do you know?
I know there's a handful getting there in the next 2 years.
So this will be impactful on some people on a rolling basis coming into this. Okay.
Parks and Trails, the modification really is for number 4 and 5 in that. Number 4 deals with the research park, and the modification is to change the proposed date and then the proposed amount, total project amount. And then step 5 deals with the acquisition of the Army Corps of Engineers land along the Skunk River Greenbelt, and that would be a modification of the date. And also adding the Board of Supervisors to the responsible parties or officer departments. Going on to community resiliency, really, majority of step 1 is completed, that's the COOPOP, but there are some additional steps that need to occur. And so it's underway, but we're in the process of developing a training plan that will be coming forth, and that's starting later this month. Step 2 is not started, and we would need to modify that date from 2015 to 2016, so push it back next year. And then step 4 is not started, but the only comment, this is from Keith Morgan, it does follow along with that step 1. It had to build on the COOPOP being adopted and through the implementation of that. Going to water quality, I have several slides on this because there were several comments that were offered. But step 1 deals with the Hickory Grove watershed. And just comments that Mike Cox noted that phase 1 has been substantially completed and work in the design phase for the next portion. So with that, there would be a need to modify the completion date out to 2020 rather than 2016. Going on to the next one. Is and this is where you really cannot read it on the screen. Steps
step number two, and there's two components, A and B. This is addressing water quality throughout Story County. There are a number of current tasks and processes and projects underway. Environmental health is looking at using GIS layers, looking at wells, septic, and various other information and tools out there to help address water quality issues. And then on the other end, on a countywide basis, I and Mike Cox have been talking to our past consultant, EOR, who did the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Plan, to identify the steps for creating watershed assessment on a countywide basis and looking at those top 12 watersheds. And so really that's what all that commentary is for task two, A and B. We would want to, on the action plan, note a change that the end date for that specific B item would go up to 2019, and again add Board of Supervisors as a department or office to that.
And I'll write there just a second, Leanne. So tell us what kind of time frame you see. You just mentioned the possibility of doing watershed assessments on all the HUP 12s in Story County. That clearly has budgetary implications. When are you thinking that this body will talk about that?
I'm hoping there's a couple different items that are happening that will be coming before the board in the next few weeks. Next week will be a discussion item on the board's agenda to talk specifically about possibly creating a watershed management authority for the Keighley branch, which is a HUC 10.
That's a HUC 10. So HUC, let's define HUC for
Hydrological Unit Code. It's a, I'm not sure who sets it up. Darren? USGS? It's a way to classify the size of watersheds.
And the bigger the number, the smaller the watershed.
Right. And it's not intuitive on that. And so HUC 8 is the Skunk River watershed, the South Skunk River watershed. Squaw Creek watershed is HUC 12, and then you get into the smaller ones.
Squaw Creek is a 10.
And I said 12. I was thinking ahead. And then you get into the smaller ones, like the East Indian Creek, West Indian Creek. Those are all HUC 12s.
Yeah, so 12s feed into 10s, which feed into 8s. Mm-hmm. Which ultimately feed into the Mississippi River, and that way we go.
Right. So that will be coming to the board next Tuesday. Probably, if I can have the whole presentation prepared, I would like to have next Tuesday consideration by the board as well to draft an RFP to go forward to have watershed assessment consulting services brought forward to the board supervisors. That would be released, and we wouldn't really start that till after the first of the year, though. This is a non-budgeted item, so that would have to tie into the budget discussions as well.
Well, either have to tie into the budget, or we have to find the money to do it in this fiscal year.
So hopefully within the next week to 2 weeks, I'll have the RFP finalized. That's just a matter of finding the time to dot the I's and cross the T's and get on the board's agenda for consideration.
Okay, thanks.
When you get information from the DNR, from the state, I mean, have you found that to be accurate and helpful?
Yes.
Could you expand on that?
Please. Specifically in regards to water quality, the most information we have for the DNR in Story County at this point is for the Squaw Creek watershed, and that is based on the Iowa Water, which is a water sampling program managed through the DNR. That's been going on through the Squaw Creek Coalition for well over 15 years.
Yeah, I'd say 20.
Yeah. That information has been, the trends have been analyzed. You can actually do projections based on the trends that have been analyzed. We're just now at the point we're starting to get sampling from Indian Creek, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, the information we get from the DNR is funneled through from local folks actually reporting it to the DNR, so it is accurate from that standpoint.
Okay.
We're not there far enough yet that we have additional information on the other watersheds, because no one actually never
Right.
You
so we
got the adopted watershed.
Right. We got a really strong assessment done on Squaw Creek, and that led to what is a model plan, a model in that DNR is utilizing the Squaw Creek plan to show other watershed authorities this is what we'd like you to put together. The problem for us and the rest of Story County and the reason to go to HUT 12s is we control a majority of the HUT 12s in Story County. All the HUT 10s spill over into other counties, and it opens up having to go deeper into the process in order to get these assessments done. The reality is if you're going to do this right, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to go in and assess every one of these streams, Indian Creek and Ballard Creek and Walnut Creek, and you're going to go in and assess all of those, and then you can possibly build authorities off of that.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to the conversation in a week or two.
Marty, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. I could.
No, it was nice to see that the county actually has an input to the state level by what we're doing so that the information we get back actually reflects what we have here.
Step four is the restorations, wetland and oxbow restorations, and improvements to water quality. And Mike Cox did note that since the original adoption of the strategic plan a year ago, the oxbow restoration along Indian Creek has been finalized. Hickory Grove watershed improvements have been completed and other wetland creations. Infrastructure, speaking to Darren, these are all ongoing action steps, so really it's a practice that we're adopting to do these three steps. Public safety, the comment I do want to note that these were modified by the board in December, so we're still a little bit operating under the amended language. So with that, you have three alternatives to consider. You can approve the modifications that were as were presented today with strikeouts and red lines in the draft plan and direct staff to reprint and distribute accordingly. These go out once they're printed to all the libraries, the city halls, part of our outreach on our website, and to department heads, elected officials, various locations. Second option is to approve any amended adopt amended proposed modifications, or anything you want to amend today, and again, direct staff to reprint, and then to send it back to staff for more discussion and bring it back at a later date.
But even in option two, I mean, this is a limited document. I mean, it's going to be visited from time to time. There will always be the likelihood of amending at a later time if you saw something. So right now, we would only be looking if there was something that maybe was missing from what
right.
you have presented now,
exactly.
if we would want to go that way. Okay.
That was better stated than how I said it. Thank you, Wayne.
Okay. Questions, comments, or action?
Well, I would move option one.
Mm-hmm.
I can't read it here, but
option one is to approve modifications as presented and direct Leanne to reprint and distribute.
Is that your motion, Ryan?
Yes, that's my motion.
And I second it.
We got a motion and a second. Any questions or comments? Leanne, anything to add?
No, other than everyone should note not to use the template in PowerPoint. Share that with staff.
This is one of the steps that this board takes to ensure that this doesn't sit on a shelf and gather dust.
Yeah.
With that, Clinton.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Option one, to make the changes as presented and reprint and distribute accordingly.
Yeah.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item for us today is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1734 to vacate a portion of Story County Secondary Road, 303rd Lane. Is there something going on 303rd Lane, Darren?
Not that I know. I believe we're at the final step of this process to vacate 303rd Lane. Bring up a picture here. This is 303rd Lane, Dream Lakes across the interstate. So this is the section we're talking about vacating. We did our public hearing back in April, Prior to that, we sent out all notifications to landowners, DOT, and utilities. Held the hearing, and then normal process, we wait a week to get comments back. We didn't receive any comments, but because this property back here would be landlocked by vacating this road, the board wanted to assure that easements for property purchase was in place before the board took its final action to vacate the road. And that was recently completed just a week ago. This property bought the existing road right away on this parcel and then all the way across on the top. And those have been recorded. So when we vacate this road now, this property will have access to get out legally. So with that, if there's no other questions, we're at the final stage to approve the road vacation.
So everything west of 570 will now become a private road. The county will have no responsibility in maintaining it now or in the future, but the private landowner will be able to do with that, treat it as a driveway.
Right, correct.
And the aerial photo of it will look a little different next time we get an aerial photo. There's a little construction that's going on out there.
Yes.
Okay. Darren, anything else before we consider this? And while this is not a public hearing item, if there's anybody who'd like to address this, feel free.
I believe that there may be one or two 911 addresses already posted here, so those will have to be moved out, probably with the new address of 570th Avenue. So I'll work with PNZ to get that started.
Okay.
No. Okay. I would compliment the board that they allow this process to work out. I think as I came to it late, it was nice to see that the board could have been and had been asked to be inserted here. They chose, I think, wisely, as we see today, that things worked in a way that I think all parties were served. And good job on you guys for doing what you did to get to this day.
Thanks, Marty. I'd sure entertain a motion to adopt resolution.
Adopt resolution 1734.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. This is effective immediately. Is that right, Darren?
Correct.
Effective immediately. Yeah. All right. Thanks. Absolutely. Next item is departmental reports and it's community services today. Carla Webb. Hi, Carla.
Good morning, Carla. Good to see you. How's your son's football career?
Over. We're done.
Yes, I will wait Friday night myself.
Would you like me to wait for Wayne?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
You met with Wayne yesterday, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Okay, so this is my quarterly report for July through September. For general assistance, we assisted 19 single household individuals and 15 family households for a total of 34 for the quarter. Denials, we had 262. That number seems to be up for the quarter. I'm not sure why, but we're seeing a few more folks through the door. And what we do there is if we're unable to assist them, we refer them on to other community agencies, and we give them a notice of decision to take with them. Sorry.
Thank you.
Yep. We had 22 people that applied but did not return. As far as assistance provided for rent, we paid out $9,934.11. Utilities, $2,094.96. And for miscellaneous items, which could be medications, transportation, and burial, it was $1,980. We still are assisting some individuals who are relocating from Crestview. And for the quarter, we helped two single households for a total of $417.
What's our total there now for Crestview? Off the top of your head?
I would say probably around $2,800 or okay. So. For SSI interim, we did have two individuals that were approved for disability cases, so we did get reimbursement of $14,675.01. So it's good to see that for those folks. Substance abuse services, we've paid on four commitments. With assets, funder priorities were identified during the quarter. We provided training for the agencies and also held an asset and joint funders meeting. That was done in September. After that meeting, we had a volunteer liaison, or we had volunteers training. So liaison assignments were completed also. For the region, we have an employment committee that has continued to work on CICS policies, which would be a supplement to county policies. And I am on that committee, and we've been working with Alyssa Wignall on those policies also. We appreciate your input. Those policies will be sent to the regional attorney for review before being brought forward for approval. In August, the Regional Governing Board voted to set the maximum regional salary contribution for CICS-funded positions. What this measure allows is for the counties to still maintain control of employee wages and FTE status, but then it identifies how much the region is putting forward for that individual salary. So it also helps the region control administrative costs too by doing that. We have hired Stacey Sugar in our office for service coordinator. She started on August 29th. Stacey's primary role is working in the Story County Jail doing service coordination duties. So she is working to connect individuals to jail diversion services, any other resources that they may need. She arranges funding for Integrated Telehealth Partners, which provides the telepsych services in the jail. And we've also recently the region approved funding for mental health medications that are on the ITP formularies. So Stacey will be working, getting those authorizations in place.
How's Stacey doing so far?
Good.
She enjoying her role?
Yes, I believe.
I know that's a little different. It can be an eye-opening experience if you're not somebody who's used to that environment.
Right. And fortunately, she does have a background in law enforcement, so she has been in the jail setting before. But yeah, I believe it's working out well for her.
Anecdotally, when is she coming to Ames every day? Is there a standard?
Around noon or so.
So mornings in the jail and then afternoon in the new services.
Yep, that's how it's been working out. Let's see, on September 13th, a mental health expo was held at the Iowa State Memorial Union. That was a collaboration of several provider agencies, as well as an individual from our office representing the region that sponsored that event. I believe there was a good attendance at it. We had two main speakers, and it seemed to be very well received. The individuals that have been on that committee plan to be meeting monthly as they work towards planning the next event next year. We're glad to be a part of that collaboration. On September 15th and 16th, the region, as well as the Heart of Iowa region, hosted five-star quality measures and outcomes defined with Derek DeFrance. The event was held in Ames here at the Quality Inn and Suites. We had over 400 individuals attending, so very good attendance. A lot of the folks that attended were direct care staff, which was really nice to see that they were our target audience. And we wanted them to know the importance of the work that they're doing. And Derek tried to send a message of things that we can do to help integrate individuals more into their communities, be a part of what's going on. And so we had very good feedback on the evaluations that were received. Providers are hoping for this training to be offered again in the future, and they also gave us ideas on some other training opportunities that they'd like to see. Myself, as well as our three administrative assistant staff, attended a trauma-informed care training in September that was provided by Patty Tribal Leads with the region, and we'll have service coordination staff going through that training.
What does that term mean?
Trauma-informed care. It's for individuals that we may work with who have experienced trauma in their lives, working to be welcoming for those individuals, taking a look at how your environment is set up, trying to not re-traumatize them when they're coming into your office and when you're working with them. We had five staff that participated in the United Way Day of Caring. I did that as well myself, and I found it very enjoyable to do, so I appreciate that opportunity for our staff. All of our staff did participate in the Safety Day training in September. Aaron Rewards, as you know, is working with Brett McLean for Veteran Services, and she is participating in various trainings, doing webinars and meeting with Brett with veterans, as well as she's seen families and individuals on her own when Brett's not available. In August, Mike Brown with the Vet Center began seeing veterans in our office, and he's scheduled to come in 2 days a month right now. I believe there may be interest in expanding that. It may not be mine, but potentially another counselor that would be available in our office. That's all I have. Any questions?
Really good job, Carl.
Good job. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Next item is an update on the proposal from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to transfer land to Story County. So backstory on this is in 2008, U.S. House of Representatives inserted language in the 2008 budget saying that the Corps of Engineers would, at no charge to Story County, give the land that was originally designated to hold the roadbed of I-35 to Story County, and specifically for use by Story County Conservation. That whole no-cost thing has somehow gotten convoluted, and we've been wrestling for the last 8 years over what that's going to look like. Really had great support from our two senators and our local representative in getting the Corps to re-engage on this. One of Stephen Holmes' last act as county attorney was to put together what I consider to be a phenomenal document that really told the story of all of these properties. And it's about 200 acres, roughly 200 acres of ground that we're talking about. And so one of the first things that Jessica got to assume in assuming the role of county attorney was helping us get to the conclusion of this, and that's why you're here to update us today.
Well, good morning to the board.
Good morning.
I'm excited to say that on September 27th, our office received communication from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers with a proposed MOU, and in it, they included what we're going to call Exhibit B, which is attached to the proposed MOU. And the nice thing about this proposal is that it specifies what Story County can do to reduce some of the administrative costs that are going to go along with this land transfer. My understanding is that the 2008 Act of Congress that conveyed the property didn't include any funding, and therefore there are obvious costs in a land transfer. And so the United States and Story County are trying to figure out how we can get this transferred at the lowest cost. Now, the MOU does have some issues legally that I'd like some time to work on to bring you back a final version. In a nutshell, I've already communicated with the Army Corps of Engineers and requested some clarifications on Exhibit B. One of the things that we're talking about is they're allowing Story County to do the survey in lieu of a $40,000 charge, but in the packet that Supervisor Sanders referenced that Stephen Holmes provided to them, we've identified every parcel and all the meets and bounds descriptions, and I've requested that they look at that and see if they can waive that $40,000 fee. There's also in Exhibit B what they're calling a Phase 1 Cultural Resources Survey, and they're allowing us to do that if we want in lieu of a $110,000 charge. However, Story County does already have a Phase 1A Cultural Resources Survey in its possession. I forwarded that on to them with the request that they accept that as the Phase 1, which would eliminate that $110,000 charge or us having to do a new survey. So there are a couple things I'd like to finalize with them. They're running that through their legal and several other departments and are going to get back to me. And there's also some broad language regarding costs in the proposed MOU, and I discussed with the Army Corps that obviously as a budgeting entity using tax dollars, we're going to need to be able to get down to a specific cost and not have it open-ended. provision. Right now it's very open-ended. They seemed receptive to that and seemed to understand that. So my update to the board is that I'm working on the initial new proposal that's been brought to me. I'd like to pare the cost down to a level that I could bring to you and eliminate some of this very open-ended language so that you're assured as far as administrative costs are concerned, and then you can decide if it's something you want to.
Well, then it's a simple transactional cost. If you know what it is, then it's a simple, you get roughly 200 acres for X number of dollars, and you can see if that transaction deemed by the Board of Supervisors is in the best interest of Story County or not. And I'm with you, Jess. I think the idea that there's some kind of open-ended cost that could be out there would cause me great pause. And so really appreciate you digging into it. Any questions for Jessica? She looks further into this on our behalf.
It has been, and Wayne probably could speak to this too, but this has been one of those urban legends that has been part of Story County lore for quite some time. To be standing here today is rather meaningful for the fact that as you would always go up the interstate and come down and you look across from the rest stop there, you look out and think back, well, there's the next Taylorville. And then it did not come to pass. And then Rick put a small tree's worth of paper on my desk early into this job and let me read through it to the best of my ability. And it's shocking how many decades Story County has. Wayne, you probably had to touch on this a time or two as well, that we have tried to move them and to get to the day where the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers, I understand it, is loath to give up anything that they possess.
Right.
So I would have to say this is a win on behalf of Story County in a way that it's quite meaningful, and I don't know what becomes of this ground, but it is now shortly, looks like we have the opportunity to make it ours, and we will decide that.
Yeah, well, so the reality is that for almost 35 years, Story County Board of Supervisors and Story County Board of Conservation Board has been requesting this from the Corps of Engineers. As soon as it became apparent that they were not going to use that ground when they shifted the entire interstate to the east for this mythical lake, Neil Smith, Story County's been trying to get it back, and we thought that it was resolved in 2008. Thought it was resolved in 2008. When it took literally an act of Congress to get it done, and that still didn't get it done. And so now we've been wrestling with it. The charge that I have, that I would request that we ask our county engineer is, don't let this flounder at all. This has been too long in us getting to resolution of this. We've got a great opportunity now. Again, thanks to Senator Ernst, Senator Grassley, and Congressman King for putting a little pressure on the right people at the Corps of Engineers to reopen the conversations. Thanks to Stephen Holmes for his killing of a small forest in order to put all this together
on paper.
But now it's incumbent upon us and Jessica to get us to the end of this thing.
Yeah. I'll keep moving forward and I'll keep you updated.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. And the only thing I've had, and Jessica presented this to the Conservation Board last week or so, and we had a lively discussion, and they were all on board for us to continue to move forward to try to expedite this process to the best of our ability. And I think that this is perhaps if we can get the questions to the answers that Jessica has, where she has a certain comfort level, that we can actually pin down what the overall cost would be and not have it open-ended, I think we are setting in a good position to be able to take over control of that and decide for its future use in years to come. So very pleased with where we are at this point.
Absolutely. Thank you. Next item is a quarterly financial report from Lisa Markley.
Good morning. Thank you for getting me out of that chaos.
Do you got something going on across the hall?
What's happening over there? 3 weeks and a wake up.
3 weeks, 21 days from today.
Margaritas then.
Many. Okay, so I put together the quarterly financial report for you. The first portion, obviously September 30th brings us 25% of the year. The first portion is where we're at in expenditures. We have 8 departments that are over 25%, some slightly, some more so.
Biggest one, animal control, and that has to do with
building purchase.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, IRBM, they did a spraying contract, so they paid most of that out already. So I plan on, if all goes well, probably in November coming back to you with additional appropriations. I will need direction from you as to how to proceed on that, whether to go 100%, go 45% additional, what.
Well, so this is Marty's first opportunity to weigh in on this. Generally, Marty, what we do is we go ahead and appropriate the additional 45% to take us to 95% for our departments, and we hold that final 5% in reserve for an as-needed basis. I don't see any reason to change our practice unless, Lisa, you tell me there's some problem with what we've been doing, or, Marty, if you have a problem with the way we've been doing it.
It's worked well for us in recent years.
Well, as I have no previous background on the budgeting side of things, I have comfort in the fact that this is what it should look like, and you're not telling me anything that gives you pause.
Well, every new board has its own way of doing things. This has just been the practice of this board. It was not necessarily the practice of boards before Wayne and I and Paul, but it's what we've been doing now for, I think, 5 years. Maybe it's just 4 years that we've been doing it. Lisa, do you see any problem with the way we've been doing it?
No.
Okay.
All right.
So then I would say let's continue.
Okay. Okay, so then the next portion... Oh, obviously, from our total, we're 19.89, so not quite 20% overall of our budget. So we're cruising along pretty good right now.
Right, but that's with $2.1 million more in countywide services,
yes.
Which is?
Oh, that was the research
part. Right.
Right. Okay, so fund balances. This is showing you how far into the fund balances or how far we are in expenses per fund, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the general fund is only at 22% approximately. Supplementals at a little over 30%. The reason that's higher than the 25 is because we pay our insurance premium up front, which is a pretty large chunk. That's our liability overall. County Mental Health Fund is only at 6%, and that's basically because we spend most of that money at the year end when we pay the region.
But all of that except for $600,000 roughly is ultimately going to the region, right? In that fund, we want to keep 250%
of our expenditures, and I think we budgeted that to be a little over $500,000.
Our expenses, I think, are budgeted at $250,000.
Okay, so a little over $500,000,
yeah.
$550,000. Rural Services Fund is only at 16%, and then Secondary Roads Fund, they're about 20% of their year spending.
And healthy balances in all.
Healthy balances in all, yeah. Yes.
Okay, revenues.
So the next page is revenues. We have 11 departments that are over the 25%, which is just awesome to me. Couple notes on here I wanted to point out. Veterans Affairs is 144%. There's a little disagreement at this point in time. There was $5,000 donation made that's been included in this, and Brett and his commission want that to be pulled back out and sent to the Freedom Fund. So I'm working on trying to figure out how to accomplish that.
So was the donation specifically for that, or was it open-ended?
The donation, I didn't get the documentation for the donation until like 2 weeks after I sent the check over. So I deposited in donations, because it's a donation. And then he sent me the documentation, and it said for the Freedom Flight. But the Freedom, it's confusing.
Past,
it's
yeah,
convoluted
yeah,
at
right,
best.
Yeah.
So I can't just, you know, change that. I have to make him spend it out of his budget and send the check to where he thinks it should go. So it's kind of a little conversation that we're having ongoing. Community services, as Carla said, she had $14,000 worth of SSI payments, so that's why that revenue is so high. And IT had some unexpected revenues from some miscellaneous things, phone charges that are canceled that we're getting checks back from that are not reimbursable, so they're going in as revenue. So, overall, we're at 38% of our budget in revenues, which is awesome.
Question for Lisa?
No.
Lisa, additional comments?
I'll pass.
You sure? I'm trying to give you an opportunity not to have to head back across the hall.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to address items that are not on today's agenda. The board will not take any action due to the primacy of the meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board today? All righty. Liaison assignments, Wayne, committee meeting updates.
Met with Carla yesterday afternoon. We discussed primarily several items that will come before the Regional Governance Board. One of them had to deal with legal aid. There was a committee was put together to kind of discuss looking at funding from the region for the services that that legal aid has. A term that was mentioned was block grant rather than fee for service. I raised just a couple questions in terms of its applicability, if they move forward in this, how would this maybe impact some other programs and services that we do. But we recognize that that the legal aid situation is a little bit somewhat unique in itself, and Carl feels that they will be able to come up with a compromise. One of the problems oftentimes is that under the current situation, if I got it correctly, was sometimes there's a few dollars left over, and they wouldn't have the ability to kind of draw those dollars down and use it as possible. But if it was more in a block grant scenario, it's a set dollar amount, it would be easier to manage and so forth. So the region is actually looking at that, and I think we're going to hear a little bit more about that once the committee makes a final recommendation.
Yeah, so kudos to the region, and specifically the region admin team on this. This was a concern for us here in Story County because it appeared that we were moving down a road of being more restrictive with what services could be accessed and paid for by the region through legal aid. And it was getting to the point that I think legal aid was indicating that it wasn't really worth their time to even provide those services anymore because they couldn't be guaranteed receiving payment. And so I'm really appreciative that the region was willing to meet with us and have the conversation about what's important to Story County. And so please pass along our thanks to them. And it'll be interesting to see where the Governance Board ends up on that.
Right. And then just a couple of other things. We talked about paying services and the overall protocol for that. Also discussed the legal aid, looking at the office over in community service. Right now they're going to kind of hold off on any decision to fill that space. And I think overall in conversation with you, Supervisor Sanders, I believe we've decided that rather than reach out to other potential agencies to utilize that service, we're going to probably hold right for the time being until we have a little bit more handle on how things are going to fall into place. There was also a discussion on the Crisis Stabilization Center, working with Mary Greeley, trying to identify what services that they would be able to provide, understanding. And then along with this, I believe this also ties in with the need to have a discussion with the neighborhood associations because of the location of where this would take place. It's really not going to change the level of the service that's being delivered right now, but I think the important thing is to make sure there's communication with the neighborhood and so forth. I think that Carla and the collaboration effort between Mary Greeley and Optima is certainly going on in the right direction at this point in time. So I was really pleased to have that conversation. So, and I can't thank Carl enough for working hand in hand in this particular area. And then a little bit later, and I didn't get the final information, but I saw Jody leaving the office as I went over, and she did relate to me that she had a meeting with Director Palmer, and they were giving some little background updates on children's mental health system, and some more information would be coming with that.
We still need to do some educational opportunity because I think he's of the impression that Regions is primarily just focusing on non-Medicaid services only, and we do a lot more than just that, and I think that trying to help him understand how this is going to play out and that it's not the exact same as the adult system as we go forth, but there's going to be more and more discussions. I did offer to sit in on the very next meeting since I was a representative of the Children's Mental Health Work Group, if it was necessary, just so that we could provide some assurance that our region, as well as the Bob Lincoln's region, is really taking a close look at the delivery of the children's mental health system as this moves forward. So that's about all I had from Carla. So another good meeting as usual.
Well, vital issue. And thank you for digging into the important part.
Well, I guess I would just dovetail on what Wayne got done. He reiterated that the fact that just recently you have seen the record step up as far as taking on jail medication payment. You have seen the telepsych implementation in the jail. And that legal aid thing is no small thing. There's a lot of advocacy done on the county level to the region that you did not allude to, but congratulations. On the committee assignments, I got a follow-up on the East Bergen County Rec Center progress. It has been narrowed from three sites to two. One will be, it's proposed to be south of the pool complex itself, and the other is down right nested on the Story County Hospital site. That determination is on a going forward basis. We should have something to offer up, I would think, here by year's end, and it'll be interesting to see what voices are. You know, I would like to say, though, I was kind of disappointed on the outside of Nevada. Well, they had 988 respondents to the online survey. A painfully small percentage came from Ames proper, and more actually than came from out of county than Ames itself, which I would have hoped that they would have inserted themselves here, because this is something that, on a going forward basis, I think that the whole county will have use for going forward. And also, we all attended the Historical Society here last week. It was one of those things that is enlightening to see how many people value that which we were, so that it could be shared with the people that are here today. They did make the case to me that that's an organization that needs refreshed by younger people. I was standing here at age 58, was one of the younger people in the room.
Wayne was one of the younger people in the room.
And it was one of those things that there are people that are passionate about this. They do all that they can. They do it with small dollars. They do it in ways that are both seen and a lot and their help. I don't think that they get their story out there as best they can. Did have the opportunity to talk to the Nevada representative, and through friends and contacts in the Nevada School District, we will be allocating student assets and time to serving the Nevada Historical Society on a going forward basis.
See, I think that's phenomenal. I mean, that's exactly what we ought to be doing, is we ought to have our schools really digging into assist there. You create some interest with some, the spark.
You don't know when you plant a seed with a young person, what it may grow into. Wayne, you're the old educator here. You probably got some success stories, but this is what these things need. They work on our behalf. They do it for no profit. They spend a lot of time. They don't certainly get enough accolades, if any. And the thing is, it was the takeaway that I had, that I had an hour and 45-minute meeting that changed how I look at Story County from this point forward.
That's good. That's lifelong resident. That's important. Announcements, Wayne.
Aiden Resource on Thursday I will be attending, and I think since I was juvenile detentions on Friday. So
outstanding. Thank you. Marty. Nothing for me. I take a motion to adjourn.
I'll move. Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, everybody.